Hey, good evening. You're listening to Wolfnet Radio Podcast. Tonight, we have the only exclusive episode for you all. Co-host tonight, as always, Andrew, room 618, Minnow Krull.
Good evening, guys. Yeah.
And Aaron, it can't be that late already. Coach Krull.
Time keeps coming up. Getting old.
Luke, all imposters, Charles Gideon Dirks.
Hello, Wolfnet.
Man, Thomas, I can't find my pants. Oh, yeah. See Raven Kruger.
I couldn't.
Tonight, only and only tonight, special guest, Battlecore and Shrapnel author, Jason Sex, Coffee, and Death Hanza. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Looped in everything you're known for.
Oh, yep, there it is.
I'm surprised we had like continue pausing. I thought there was going to be even more. I was like, we need more than three stanzas.
A lot of people throw in booze also because my characters drink a lot.
Dang it.
I remember handing you a Busch Light the other night.
Yeah. Yeah. My characters drink and so does their author.
I'm drawing for personal experience.
Write what you know.
Hey, that way you can write off all his alcohol as research.
Oh,
Coach, you can't. Coach, you can't start writing now.
I can't.
For other tax evasion tips, just stay tuned.
Include brainstorming juice.
And if you're the IRS, contact us at heat.management.
Brainstorming juice. Advice.
All right, hey, we got what's this exclusiveness, Hansa? You got something for us?
Yeah, you kept bothering us for months that you wanted to do one interview and one interview only, and Wolfnet, you know, was the chosen podcast.
Top of the list.
What is this golden egg?
Well, I've got a work in progress, and I am excited to talk about it. And I figured you guys would be the ones that want to hear about it because it's going to be controversial. So.
Oh, we love controversy.
We've done before.
You're going to tell me you got an audiobook straight out of the box?
Ooh.
Skipping print, straight to audio. Straight to audio. Oh, my God.
And a bridge.
Nice.
It's an old cassette in the box.
Oh,
that's even better. Yet.
It's just Hansa's shower thoughts, just like random thoughts at 2 a.m. with Hansa.
The 10 cassette set for $19.99,
and that way, if it's if it's in risk of being stolen, you can just start ripping out the strings.
Oh, man. It probably costs more money to buy the cassette player now.
That is
the whole.
Oh, they won't find it.
So good.
People will lose their minds like, what is this?
My son actually has a boombox, you know, so he's got a couple collection of like a Lynyrd Skynyrd tape, a Bon Jovi tape, you know. As I find them in a secondhand store, I scoop them up for him.
That's great.
I keep one at work just to make people think about it. Like, why is this still here? Or like, what is that? It's like, it's kind of like a rotary dial phone.
Yeah.
So I doubt it is Hans's shower thoughts brought to you by
my head is
dial. Dial soap.
What's the buy a dollar for a 99 cents company?
No, dude, I don't know if you guys have seen those.
Dollar Tree?
Military themed, you know, like, you know, naval supremacy. I'm like, am I washing with bulk fuel? I mean, what, you
know? It smells like JP4.
Yeah. the scent is kerosene. I don't get it.
Everybody loves amphibious fuel.
Wet and unwashed feet.
Columbia House.
Bring in the decon team.
Yeah. Why do I smell worse after my shower?
You're going to have to like slam a grounding rod into the next to the shower for you so you'll burst into flames.
Oh, man. All right. So lay it on us. We're all eagerly awaiting this golden nugget.
So a while back, I was asked to write a sequel to the Cult classic. I want to be very nice about the book. Cult classic Far Country, BattleTech novel from the early 90s.
What?
Tweet.
So yeah, as some people know, you guys, maybe some of your listeners don't know, but yeah, in the early 90s, there was a one-off BattleTech book where a Draconis jump ship jumped out. It misjumped way out to God knows where. And they had aliens. They had these big, tall, parrot-looking chicken creatures, the Tiete.
The Tate.
Yeah, Tiete.
Titata.
Titata.
Oh, geez, here we go, trying to pronounce something we can't spell.
There's a lot of vowels in it. So, I was asked to write a sequel to it. And so I have. I've been working on it, and I'm excited to talk about it because, the fans view Far Country in like some of them like it, some of them hate it, and some of them have this. Well, it's a good story, but you know it's not very battle techie. So I'm excited to try my hand at it. So I thought I'd talk about it.
What were your first thoughts on getting this type of task?
I mean, what went through your mind when somebody said, "Hey, let's do a sequel"?
Terror. Yeah, because this is
Tate terror or
yeah. the horror.
You're taking on, you know, a book that is well respected and regarded amongst the community. That how do you go into that not worried about screwing it up?
Worrying about screwing it up has been foremost in my brain because, I mean, like you said, it's everybody knows about this book. Everybody's seen the memes, and the original author, Peter Rice, who on a side note, he wrote some other books in the FASA, you know, the FASA catalog as part of the Leviathans universe. He wrote some really good armor based books. They're almost like Team Yankee like. So, you know, the Far Country is a good story. It's just a terrible BattleTech story. so that my bar is to write a good story. I mean, if I continue the tradition of good story and bad BattleTech, okay, but you know I'm trying for better. So
I mean, if we dissect how and why Far Country is one of the most controversial books in the BattleTech history, I mean, it's clearly fucking aliens.
Yes.
I mean, it's a pretty hot button topic in the community for a long time. Does BattleTech deserve
aliens with spears?
Yeah,
spears.
Well, they're gonna get better guns this time. You know, I'm trying to move on to 21st.
They're evolving.
Whoa, are we getting golden nuggets like throughout this whole thing? So
I figure I'll give you guys a synopsis.
Have guns now?
Yes. I'll give you his plot synopsis. I'm gonna try and keep it a little spoiler free, you know. So my story and what I had to go back to the editors with, you know, because Far Country came out before the clan homeworlds were located, before FM Crusader clans and home and Warden clans, you know, before all of the Warriors of Kerensky books. So I came back and said that, you know, Far Country is, if you're thinking about the map, north of the clan homeworlds. So they're essentially, you know, out of the universe. I'm putting air quotes. I should have my camera on so you can see them. You know, they were out of the universe then. But if we are going to draw a big enough map now, they're only a couple jumps away from the clan homeworlds. They just don't know that. So in this story, the original story, for those who haven't read it lately, the Draconis Combine Death Team and some mercenaries, they misjump. They land on this war-torn world that other units had misjumped to earlier, like centuries earlier. And they've got some battle mechs. And at the end, the Death Team and the Tiete, they get in a dropship and they take off to the moon. To an inhabitable moon. That's what they call Far Country. And that's where the story ends, where they're going there. And that is 3056. And that's important because in my story, it's about 3085. And this is about, it's a couple level threes of a Shadow Division. One of the Word of Blake, you know, so they misjump in. And they're, you know, and they detect the far country, and the desk team is like, you know, hey, land here. That world sucks. You know, we got food, we got water, we got happy aliens. You know, you're welcome to land here. And the word of Blake sees an opportunity here, because the desk team doesn't know about the jihad. They don't know anything. You know, they're thinking, oh, these are happy Comstar guys. Yay, they won a Tukyid. So when the Shadow Divisions land and they say, we were created to take the war to the clans, the desk team's on board. They're like, hell yeah, let's roll, buddy. And so over the couple decades, the word of Blake train up the Tiate, you know, and most of the desk team dies just from old age. So my story, that's kind of like the first opening chapters. And so really kicks off in 3151, the Ilklan era. You know, people are always like, what are the Homeworld clans doing? What are the Homeworld clans doing? Well, they're getting their asses kicked because the Tiate and the Word of Blake jump in and it's just game on.
And whoa, so, time out. Wait. We have bird people with spears, and then the Word of Blake show up.
Yes.
And now they're like super soldiers taking on the clan Homeworlds.
Well, they're not super soldiers. I mean, they're not super birds. They're just, you know, but they, you know, I'm writing it as barding that they can put on, like barding and like carry light machine guns, because the birds are strong. You know, birds have big chests, you know, because they can fly.
Sure.
And so on the tabletop, they'll be treated essentially as battle armor squads, but with like a foot cavalry SPAs where they can sit there and move through rough terrain. So, you know, there's foot infantry, but with battle, but you'll treat them as battle armor. They'll have like 5 points of armor plus the bird inside. So, you know, I'm putting a lot of thought in this because I don't work on the game side of the house. I'm just one of the fiction writers. But, you know, if they do like an XTRO Far Country, you know, then that would, you know, obviously people are going to want to put these on the table. So, yeah, they've got, you know, they're battle armored. You know, they have battle armor. They're not battle armor troopers, but they're battle armor. So they have them. And then the Word of Blake, because they're birds, they have excellent gunnery because they have good vision. So I've been writing in there that essentially they have, if on the tabletop, they would have a plus one to hit with direct energy and direct ballistic weapons, you know? So, and the Word of Blake is putting command consoles in like the Marauders or King Crabs, anything that can have a dual cockpit. So I'm trying to make it good on the tabletop where the clans, you know, because the clans have better technology and better pilots. And, but the birds will have a plus one to hit. And also because of dual cockpits, they'll have a plus one initiative. So it should balance out. Yes.
Yeah, so,
Robot chicken.
So, now.
I'm hoping that on the tabletop players, I'm hoping to write battle sequences and scenes that people are going to want to replicate on the table. If that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense.
That's crazy as a writer that you're going that far into ensuring that the story will be able to be played out on the tabletop.
You're dropping a lot here. Now,
yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I want to put some peeps on the board.
Okay, first of all, in these Shadow Divisions, there were Mani Domini.
Right.
In the Shadow Division. So these are cybernetics installed human beings.
Please tell me you're doing cybernetics on the Tate.
Did the chickens get roboticized?
Somewhat. I mean, because, you know, the Shadow Divisions only have what they kind of brought with them. And they still have their original dropship. So, you know, it's kind of like what they can make and what they can salvage and, you know, what they can come up with. And the birds aren't stupid. They're uneducated. They don't go to bird school, you know. The desk team has been teaching them to read and write. So, you know, by the time the Shadow Divisions come in, you know, the birds are already intelligent. So
I can't wait for like the cannibalism to start where they all eat chicken.
Well, that the birds find out that people are delicious, and so that's one of the scenes. I hate to spoil that plot point, but it's supposed to be kind of terrifying when the readers are reading this because you're sitting there thinking, okay, you know, I'm going for them because I hate the clans, but the birds kind of start eating the clan warriors, and you're like, okay, well, maybe this is bad, you know. So, you know, I'm really trying to have the readers have this: who am I going for in this story?
Oh my goodness. So
Did I hear right that you said that if you look at the star map, right, and you have the Klein homeworlds are way at the top of the map, so they're north of that yet, right?
Right.
Right. Have they ran into or are they doing anything with the gene cast?
I'm writing in the last surviving members of the society, because if you remember in the Wars of Reaving, they had the mutagenic virus where they were sitting there giving themselves like essentially superpowers. They could sit them, give themselves exoskeletons. So yes, you know, the last of the society is like they're trying, because the society was always about overthrowing clan culture. So if the society survivors are like, burn it to the ground. We don't care. So they kind of come out of hiding. And so they're sitting there and manipulating, you know, the clan warriors, you know, well, the society warriors come back out. The gene cast, you know, their mutagenic virus warriors come back out to fight these birds.
It's not called the bird flu, is it?
Oh, no.
Oh, geez.
I was going there, too.
But one of the society's big goals is to capture the Tiete and start incorporating in their genetics into the program. Because, like I said, birds have massive chest muscles, so they can fly and stuff. I mean, the Tiete don't fly. But they sit there and see this is a way to buff up their elemental powers. You know, the elemental
strength. If I'm not wrong, the Tiete, they were like ostrich-type things, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they're you know, hunched over. Yeah, they're more like they look like parrots, but yeah, they're ostriches with arms, you know.
So I just want to roll the fact, just so I'm on the same page, we're talking about a possible like alliance of the Tates, Word Blake, and the Society.
The Society are the wild card. Because they kind of want to burn it all down, so they're kind of stabbing Clan Society in the back. But they're also not friendly to the Word of Blake because they are spheroid bastards. So they see the Tiete as a tool to use. So while they come out friendly to the aliens, they're actually backstabbing them as well. So, you know, the society is nobody's friend. And eventually everybody kind of realizes that. Yeah.
And the Word of Blake are still at this point with, you know, the Tetes or Tiates or they're with the Word of Blake yet, right?
Right. Right, the Word of Blake has about two level threes, which is about six battalions of mechs and armor, and the Tiete are essentially filling out the infantry forces. So, you know, of course, they're having to really capture clan technology to keep filling out their forces. And after the Wars of Reaving, you know, the clans are in pretty bad shape. They're all down to about three galaxies. So if it was just a straight-up fight, the clans could take them. But, you know, the clans don't fight that way. You know, so as the Word of Blake's just kind of coming in and smashing different planets, the different clans are like, what, you know, what the hell's going on? Why are you attacking us? Well, it's not me, you know? So there's a lot of confusion at the beginning and they take a lot of early losses. You know, the Word of Blake, you know, gets them a lot of early wins as the clans are trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
I mean, no. how do you even bid birds? When you're throwing down the bachal, I mean,
flocks and murders.
Flocks and murders. There we go.
I love it. I love it.
Man, this
this is out there. I like it.
Hansa, I gotta say, I'm very intrigued right off the bat. I have lots of questions, but this could be.
I like how we're getting back to the, you know, we're kind of finding out what's going on in the homeworld cons a little bit. Yep, right, then exactly, a whole another area of space that we can start playing in again. So, and it sounds like there's going to be some crazy shit going on out there. You know,
well
new tech and yeah.
Well, because I mean, for a long time we've known that Hans is coming with the War of Reaving books, right? So it makes sense. Well, and also during the Adepticon streams, there were some not so subtle hints about Far Country getting dropped. So. I'm surprised and yet not surprised, but also Hansa, and maybe hopefully this doesn't get me kicked out of the NDA places we share.
Yeah,
but,
I'm really trying to get fired for, you know, telling you guys. Right.
But I'm putting pieces together, and I'm distinctly remembering you asking a question about non-humans piloting mechs. Was that in relation to this?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, because neural helmets are specifically designed for humans. And back in the old lore, you know, not everybody could even put on a neural helmet. That's been kind of ignored for the past 30 years. Now it's like kind of like everybody can cook. But back in the old day, like it was like one in a thousand, one in a million could actually be a mech warrior. It was really important. So, yeah, I've been trying to research whether the Tiate could pilot mechs. And I'm really, I'm coming down the side of no. Just to kind of fit with the old lore and to sit there and make them gunners, you know, because then it also gives them a unique flavor on the tabletop. If they were just mech warriors, and who cares? But for them to sit there and be the gunners for a Word of Blake, you know, to sit there and get that plus one initiative and stuff like that, I was doing a lot of research, and that's where I came down on. So,
did you guys all see that that mech, I think, that Dale put out that was that armored turkey? I wonder what their battle armor would look like.
The battle armor turkeys?
Yeah, for the Tiate, right? You got to put battle armor on them, right?
Anything. Jade Falcon or Snow Raven.
Is it more like armor plates?
It's more like armor plates. I mean, if you sit there and you watch like old armor barding from like the medieval eras, that's what I imagine more like.
Joust, the old Atari game Joust.
So I am hoping, you know, this is me reaching. This is me, you know, talking, you know, Circle of Trust. I'm hoping that Farther Country does really well, and because I'm trying to set it, like you said about the Homeworld clans, I'm really trying to set it so this is kind of like its own little sandbox that we can keep coming back to. I'm really hoping this does well, the fans receive it well, and CGO lets me write Farthest Country, you know, to kind of run out the trilogy and do a sequel and see what happens next.
Sure. Now, is it Farther Country or Further Country?
The CGO made me go with Farther Country, because they wanted that continuation, Far Country, Farther, and then I would go with Farthest, which I know isn't really kind of a word, but, you know, it is what it is.
It's never stopped Catalyst before.
Work. Nope. Make them up. So, that's where my story is. I think it's going to be interesting. I'm hoping the readers kind of dig it or at least give it a chance.
Well,
I would just see what happens.
Yep.
I like the stance where you're coming from, where you're not only thinking about story, but you're also thinking about tabletop and the implementation. I would love if all writers did that. I really like the fact that you're like, okay, I'm gonna try to flush out as much information and stuff where it's very easy for us game players to be like, well, it says this in the book and it represents that on the tabletop and it
I'm really curious how the MUL team's going to come up with murders and crow and flocks and how they're going to point cost on that.
Is it pre Word of Blake? Is that like the flock, and then post Word of Blake it's the murder kind of a thing where it goes from? Or is it, you know, subdivisions?
What's their deployment strategy? Are they going to adopt? They're going to go to sixes.
I've been writing them as threes and then joining into sixes because they're pretty powerful on the table. I mean, because they fit this middle ground between light regular infantry, just regular bubbas, and actual battle armor. So three of them, and then you can have, you know, two groups operating in the same hex as six of them. So that's what I'm writing, and I've been doing a lot of sketching out. Like, everything that I'm writing into the book is, I am hoping the readers will understand what I did. Like, I build it in, you know, with my tech manual so they can replicate on the tabletop if an X-Hero doesn't come out. So, yeah, it's as I'm sitting there kind of playing around the numbers, these battle armor groups of three with five armor and one bird seem like the best, you know, the middle ground in between, you know, of where I see them in between regular infantry and standard battle armor.
So going back to the Word of Blake and stuff, are they going to make any further technological advances as far as their cybernetics? And because I know, you know, late in their deal, right, they were playing with lambs and they had that Geesalt mech that was they interfaced directly with battle armor in the mech and
the. They come, you know, the Word of Blake has a couple lambs, you know, they brought with them. And they modify them with dual cockpits, you know, like essentially a pilot gunner. And the Tiate, because they're flightless birds, they consider it high honor to be, you know, a lamb gunner, just to sit there and to be able to fly.
It's not
something they can do. So yeah, the Tiete leadership really wants to, like, when they get to the clan homeworlds, they want to try and rebuild like lamb facilities. They want new lands, like clan lambs. So again, that would be something you'd see in the next sequel, because this book is them taking that property, you know, and the next book would be them sitting there and having alien designed and, you know, purpose built, you know, clan technology mechs and lambs specifically. So if everything goes right, like I said, it's got to work with the readers. I hope they don't, tar and brand me and, you know, throw me into the Atlantic.
Now I know.
Tar and feather. Yeah.
and only because I know you really dig deep into your research, Jason, but, have you put any thought for the Titata, do they have a preference between Trueborn or Freebirth when they discover, you know,
how good they taste?
Right.
I didn't go that far. No.
Can you add in free range, or
they do have a preference for elementals for other reasons, for other purposes? I'm seeing how far Catalyst let me take that particular train, but they're both a society and believe that the early experiments for women carrying Tiete to term don't work out well. So, you know, they try to go the other way around.
The Tete are not born like through eggs and shit. They're born live.
They're in eggs, and the egg is just too big, you know, so they have a cesarean. So, I mean, it just doesn't seem practical enough for them to continue that line of research. So, you know, a lot of this is the society, you know, with, I'm putting the air quotes around the word volunteers. So, so.
Volunteers.
So, you know, but again, Catalyst is telling me to keep it PG-13. So a lot of that's going to be more off screen, and you'll get the descriptions, you know, in a very clinical, you know, male subject impregnated, female Tiete, you know, progressing, you know, so.
Interesting.
Yes. I'm trying to keep it clinical and just let the readers imagine.
Sure.
Will they be like immune? Because I know that in the War of Reaving and stuff, the scientist cast, they would take and custom make viruses or mutate pathogens that would target specific bloodlines within the clans.
Right.
Are the Tete like immune to that? So they won't ever have to worry about that? Or is that not a practice that's followed in the clan homeworlds anymore?
The society starts work on that, but it's not something you can just do instantly. I mean, remember when they sit there and in the Wars of Reaving, they've had the genetic code for these warriors for centuries, you know, at least a century or two. So developing those viruses is relatively, you know, really the problem is making sure it targets and doesn't kill everybody. You know, at least that's one of the things, you know, pulling from my Wars of Reaving story, that's literally one of the lines the scientist has. He's like, it's killing everybody. I got to keep working on it. So these are aliens. So while they have the knowledge and they kind of know that, you know, they can carry over the knowledge and the basic practices, they have to start from scratch. So no, they talk about it. They start work on it. It's not a threat the Tiete face in this book.
All right.
Do you have, because players, especially in the game side of the thing, they love like latching on to, you know, units, you know, like the Black Widow Company or, you know, the Bounty Hunter, or is there any like specific, you know, elite Tati unit or
Shadow Tetes?
Yeah. Are they like a 51st division kind of a thing, or there any like names you can maybe give us that
92%ers?
Their line forces, their brute force forces are called the Great Auk units. You know, the Great Auk Murders. you know, after the giant bird of the time. Elite units, like they're elite special forces. Because remember, the desk teams are sitting there training them. So their desk birds are Kias, K-E-A. It's a New Zealand bird that's like as smart as a seven-year-old child. You know, I was doing a lot of research into birds. I'm serious. I'm not making that up. There's this parrot-like creature down in New Zealand that's like smarter than kindergartners. And so that's the name I use for their elite desk birds. K-E-A.
Yep. And now going back to, because you mentioning lambs, like, especially with the Irby lamb coming out, people are all over the place talking about lambs. People are praying for more actual lambs. And now you talking about the Tet Atas getting lambs. That, like, are we talking, like, getting up to, like, could we see, like, an Atlas lamb? Are we going to start breaking the rules on the weights? Are we going to, like, start pushing boundaries here?
Back in the 80s, you know, like, the initial rules of war, there was no limit. I mean, I think pretty much everybody at one point or another built, like, an awesome lamb so you could strafe with all three PPCs, you know? You're like, so... I don't work on that side of the house. I'm on the fiction side. But yes, I would love to see a return to those rules where just everything's on the table. You want to build, you want your Highlander to turn into a lamb and then take off? Go for it. You know, everything's on the table. You know, go crazy.
Highlander burial from high orbit.
Exactly. Dropping in from like 20 levels.
That would be fun.
Crater.
Especially if a TT was piloting. I mean, Iron Eagle, that son of a bitch.
Iron Eagle. Yes.
Pop in the cassette tape and go for it.
Put in your 80s classic rock.
Yeah. Man. Wow. This
is sky.
This is not expected this at all.
Not expecting this. This is.
Yeah, you guys thought I was just working on some old standard, you know, old looking
Corners
combine merch.
I didn't think it was going to be that.
Well, yeah, I was shooting for Wars of Reaving, but I didn't. I never in a million years imagined you were going to start telling us about like the follow up. What was going to, you know, where you filling in the Wars of Reaving, where that was going to end up. This is, yeah, did not see this coming.
Well, so... it's a natural. I'm hoping to tie it all together almost because you go from the Wars of Reaving into this.
Yeah, because like you said, farther country is going to be Ilklan era, right?
Total natural progression.
Exactly.
So, I mean, everyone's been asking the same question over and over. It's like, is BattleTech Fiction just pumping out the same storylines over and over, just in a different era?
Rehashing everything. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know there's been a small select community that's like, hey, is it time for aliens? Like, did any of that influence this and be like, yes, it maybe is time for aliens to shake the BattleTech community up a little bit?
It definitely shaped the target because, I mean, theoretically, they, you know, the Word of Blake teaches them they could have jumped in anywhere. By jumping into the clan homeworlds, it kind of keeps it its own little sandbox. So, you know, the people who want aliens can play aliens, Word of Blake versus the clans. Anybody who wants to keep it human, you know, human only, it just ignore the homeworld clans like we've been doing. They just don't exist. Whatever happened, happened. You know, the hell with them. Sure. So, you know, the homeworld clans actually make a great kind of little test bed to see how the fan base reacts to aliens in general. So.
Now, going down that pathline, you did mention there is a third book.
I'm hoping. Again, well, you know, it took 30 years for them to have me write the sequel.
If the community accepts.
Right.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. This is a little crazy, but you know,
it might be
the shot in the ass that the BattleTech community needs. So
really,
I would really like to know what was the liquor and what time was it and how much had you drank to fathom and come up with this idea. I mean, this is stretching, man.
Make your mark.
I'm excited.
Make your mark. Coke Zero and lots of it.
No, I call it. That can't be. That has to be absent. That has to be
absent.
I think I heard it was about what, 3 a.m.
But
you said that you were approached, right?
They were. They approached.
Who approached you? Who did?
This would be John Helfers. I'm just gonna
nice.
Throw him under the bus. Knew it.
I was. So we talked to that guy a lot, and he never even. He was too busy giving you shit, Aaron. He never. He usually gives us a little something.
He talked our ear off that evening.
If I was interested in doing this, you know, I had to go back with the plot idea, you know, to sit there and bounce it off him and, you know, run it through the wickets. So.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, because they've said multiple times, right? Like if somebody comes up with a good enough story, right? So it was they prodded you and they were like, hey, give this a real shot. And
It was really kind of like two separate emails, like, you know, what are you thinking about for After the Wars Are Raving? And I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, what do you think about doing a sequel to Peter Rice's, you know, book Far Country? I'm like, chocolate and peanut butter, you know?
Maker's Mark and Coke Zero.
There we go.
If I'm not mistaken, you said you had to give Philip a ride home from Adepticon. Did you guys get to brainstorm and come up with, bounce some ideas off and get some feedback?
I did. I bounced a lot to Phil, and you know he shot down some of my more crazier ideas. So
thank God.
Yeah. So
crazy.
I can't wait to see the fact checkers like try and mull through this a little bit.
breaking new ground for them too.
Steamrolling.
Not really, because we haven't seen what's going on in the Homeworld clans. We haven't seen what's going on with the aliens.
That's what I mean. Nobody has any references besides a book.
Yeah, this is the easiest story in the universe.
It's like, what do we do?
You pick the 30-second, you know, Shadow Division to jump out. Yeah, they're missing. Okay, you're good.
who's carry on? How far that the Tetes would evolve? Once they were introduced to the Death Warriors, and obviously they're like teaching them, their whole civilization is just going to get ramped up.
It's a blank slate. It is so much fun to write. It's just the words flow because I don't have to research. I don't have to look things up. I just make crap. Create. Up, you know? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, I'm being creative.
like Death Needle flying feathers. Like, pew, pew, pew.
Yeah. Like ninja feathers.
Do you write with a quill just to kind of really pull yourself into
I wish my penmanship would support that because that would be amazing. You know,
the first draft edits.
When the book comes out, you have to carry around autographs. A quill so that you sign your name with a quill.
Yes, you read my brain.
That would be really good.
Then
you have to have a table for your inkwell.
Yeah. It makes me look old fashioned. It makes me look old timey and cool. You know, I could wear like a tweed jacket or something.
Smoker's robe. As I process all of these things,
I was gonna say, so Charles feels like he's struggling to.
I'm struggling so hard to process everything. Getting into Tolkien realm, are you having to invent the language of the Tetes?
Okay. Now you're gonna this is a harder question than it sounds like. Now you're asking like writing stuff. No, I am not gonna go down there because I am not a medieval studier like Tolkien was. I mean, he literally had degrees in that kind of nonsense. But also B, and this is, you know, kind of inside baseball for writing. But there's a lot of people that will sit there and say, you know, should you use new words? Should you make up new expressions when you're sitting there writing stuff that's 1,000 years in the future? Because it makes sense. You know, language changes. However, I'm writing for the people of today. So, and the language has to flow. It has to be understandable. The readers have to sit there and say, oh, I like where this is going, not what the hell am I reading? So that's a long answer to say no. the story has to be enjoyable. So,
well, you can't have tweet tweet cluck cluck cheek cheek and
exactly.
We're going left.
Well, I'm wondering if you could throw. I mean, and I don't know if the book
wing and arm signals.
Oh yeah, oh, of course they're doing that. They're trained by the desk. So, like
Celia and Unity, and it just like small words.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah,
like that.
So yeah, you know, I am working in their own little expressions, you know, like far country, you know, so, and of course they speak a lot of Japanese, you know, so
which all right, I guess that makes sense.
And the calligraphy would be easier to make with like a toe claw what if
they have like elaborate wing patterns that mean something that you can only have with your feathers
on their mechs. They paint them up like feathers, you know, stuff like that. So yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Of course.
Very cool. So,
They speak Japanese, and that is like kind of near the end of the book. I do start setting up where the Tiate aren't sure that the warder Blake has been telling them the full truth. And, you know, they do a lot of that communication in Japanese when they're sitting there talking among themselves. So, you know,
that's very cool.
Yeah. So, you know, not to spoiler, but the end of the book kind of sets it at an uneasy piece, you know, where the Warder Blake and the Tiate own some worlds. The clans are like kind of fought to a standstill, and everybody's just like, okay, just everybody breathe, because, you know, and the society is just out there just running amok. So, you know, it's kind of an uneasy standstill. And I did that so players can sit there and just take it wherever the hell they want to run it with it in case another book does not come out. And so, yeah, those are some of the nuggets I leave, is that they're sitting there, you know, right, talking Japanese, you know, and sitting there saying, you know, are we really the good guys here? So
I can see them being really good mimic creatures with a culture that, you know, can mimic any sound, just like a
parrot. Yeah.
I know you do a lot of research, Hansa, when you write books. Like, is there a large portion of your YouTube feed or something that's just like watching ostriches and chickens and just like,
yeah,
stare out the window and you're like,
I have
an hour goes by and you're like,
bookmarks of like, you know, you sit there and you're like the you know, you go to these zoos and sit there and, you know, go straight to the avian houses, you know, with their live feeds. And it's just like, they're not doing anything, you know, like they're just sitting there, like looking at each other, you know, and like maybe
weird bird eating rituals.
Yeah. You know, and the penguins out there at the aquariums, you know, they get it on, you know, those creatures are horny. But yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what kind of special abilities will come out of this where, you know, they'd be great. Yeah, they might not be able to fly, but can they dive? Can they,
like, swim?
You did mention their very good eyesight. I wonder if they have, like, a different range table.
Super recon.
Like, could you imagine the melee, right? I mean, from cockfighting and stuff, they sharpen their nails and put little claws and shit on them and just dice people up, right?
I bet their short range is, like, or their medium range is, like, +1. Long range is +3. Extended range +4.
Well,
melee minus one.
Yeah, and possibly they might just even pick up the TRO's SPA, you know.
Oh, that could be it.
Yeah, that might be getting a little game breaking, but you know, I'd love to see, you know, I mean, because this has
we're a new territory, right?
We are in
new
territory.
We're in farther country, man.
But you're also comparing them, like you're putting them in a setting with Warder Blake and society. So
and the client, yes,
right. So if you're gonna have like game breaking, that's the setting to do it in. Everybody there has some sort of implant or genetics or whatever to get them negatives anyway. So
I will say,
because you implanted them with the Shadow Divisions and with society, it will make a lot more sense to the readers. Like, if you were just going to be like, oh, the Tatitis showed up at the, you know, Lyran Commonwealth, you know, they showed up on New Avalon or something like that. And they're like, oh, greetings like that. I don't think
that was a thing that the Shadow Divisions did during the Warder Blake, was that super jump, right?
Yeah. Oh,
they would do a jump while in a jump, and that's how they were able to move amongst the stars so quickly. I mean, it gives a great opportunity to have this missed jump happen.
So, and, yeah. Well, you want to hear something? Okay, so I've been thinking a lot about this, and I wasn't going to discuss it, but, you know, the bird.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah. The birds see math differently because they're aliens. So, you know, space, you know, if you imagine a rubber mat and, you know, space, right, if it folds up, right? How a missed jump happens is you're jumping and you jump through the ripple. Instead of taking the long way up and down, you're jumping through the ripple. That's how a missed jump happens. The birds see space upside down. You're not punching through the ripple. You're just jumping over it. So it, for them, it's not a super jump. It's just a jump, which makes them incredibly dangerous. Like, they're rewiring the Word of Blake ships. So they can jump. And the clans are like, well, you know, this is the, you know, they're here and this is one jump away. So we'll garrison one jump away and then we'll put it maybe a little bit over here in case you have a lithium ion battery. And no, the birds are just jumping three jumps away, four jumps away because they don't care. They see space differently, which makes them incredibly
dangerous. Do they still have to honor the Lagrange points and stuff then too?
Yeah, because they are bound to the Word of Blake ships. They can do the math and the programming differently. So
they're literally jumping like 120 light years instead of 30.
Right, because they can jump the gaps. So
they could overrun and come and be a threat.
Sounds like an interspirit threat to me.
Wow.
But you know, there's just not a lot of them. There's only a couple of regiments worth of them. There's like two level threes of Word of Blake, and they build essentially about a half a division worth of ground troops of battle armor. So, you know, there's just the birds can only breed so fast. So, but you know, again, something else they want to fix. Exactly.
They're going to get the Iron Womb technology, and
now
I know gestation period for a bird is a lot shorter than it is for a human.
See, now you're picking at the threads for my farthest country.
Look
at you, Coach, thinking like a writer.
This is such a great Easter egg.
I'm fucking in, man. I'm in.
He's only in so he can write off the booze.
I was not expecting this, Danza. This is a golden egg. I will say that.
I'm hoping people dig it. So, you know, I hope they say, man, he did his homework. And, you know, he's not just phoning this one in.
Did his homework.
I would say so.
What about some of the regular basis questions? Do you have a favorite mech or unit or tank that you've had over the years?
One of my first mechs I played was a Hunchback. And it is just a solid mech. I played a lot during the old 80s days, and they end up kind of almost being a go-to when I'm writing. It's like, oh, I need about a medium mech. Oh, I actually have to make sure I don't put a Hunchback in every story.
Same old Hunchback.
There's a Hunchback in farther country.
Exactly. So, you know, like, there's a football story. Why is there a Hunchback on the field? Okay, you know, so, I mean, I have to, but, you know, if I was going to pick a favorite mech, that one is both for playing and, you know, the classic Hunchback and the classic awesome 8Q. I mean, even in the Ilclan era, an awesome is still awesome. So, and then
I'm putting $10 down that the Hunchback is the first new lamb. A Hunchback lamb. I mean, it's just a mech buster, right? But it's still, that'd be awesome.
It's gonna be a little wonky on one side.
Well, you're just going to fold underneath.
Have it sling underneath. No
different than the A-10 Warthog, right?
Yeah.
I did have one more question on the tutus. What is their society structured like? Is it like a democratic? Is it
Ewoks?
Is there a king?
Ewoks.
Well, they're very tribal. So they're very tribal. They have their chief. They kind of have, like, you know, their shaman or visionaries and stuff like that. But because the desk team is training them, they're very honorable. You know, so, you know, when the clans kind of figure out, it's like, oh, they'll accept one-on-one challenges, you know. And, of course, the Word of Blake is like, no, stop doing that. Don't play by their rules. But the birds are like, no, we're, you know, so because
they respect it.
Right. The desk team kind of shaped their society. So they speak Japanese. That. They have a lot of honor. They're honor bound, you know. So the prime directive is not in effect in BattleTech. You know, their society was jacked the moment they left the original planet and got to Far Country. So, yeah, they're kind of a tribal, very family-based, very close-knit, you know, groupings of about 100. But, you know, but they're also very Draconis Combine in nature.
I could see where that would butt in the... with the Word of Blake pretty heavily.
Right.
So.
So they are allies. You know, the Word of... And the birds are in on attacking the clans, but they're not the same. You know,
very.
I keep thinking to myself, there's sooner or later there's going to be a character with a nickname of Birdman.
Maybe Birdman. In their language, Birdman.
Like the first the first liaison, or like the first linguist, or
oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All I can think is Rick and Morty when you say Birdman.
This is going to be cool.
I still can't get free range elementals out of my head.
That was fantastic. They look like free born or true born. Free range.
Free birds or true born.
When you look at an elemental, it's like, those are some damn good look. Big
yeah,
ribs,
I mean,
you know?
Will there be characteristic differences visually between male and female warriors of this culture? Well,
like traditional birds, the males are brighter, you know, and the females
more color pattern.
And right, and when they're pregnant, you know, I know there's a technical term for bird pregnancy. You know, I've had a beer, but yeah, when the birds are carrying, when they got the egg before they lie it, and then when they're going to sit there and kind of like sit and park their butt, their feathers they molt and they go dark, you know. So, you know, that's how you know to blend in. But you know, that's not really an important part of the story. I throw that in for the readers. You know, it's kind of like a technical discussion the society's talking about. You know, oh, we captured this brown one. Why was she brown? Oh, she was on the nest. We left the egg there. Yeah. Well, they're not caring. I mean, birds just kind of plop out the eggs. But you know, they sit on them.
Yeah. You know,
again, plop out, not a scientific term, but.
Well, Hansa,
I'm a history major, you know.
Wow, wow, man.
Right just, on.
Wow.
This has been
so can we get like an introduction on how you got into BattleTech?
Oh, yeah. The way back in 87, it was my 8th grade. My best friends were a year older than me. So they went to high school. They were freshmen in high school. I was still in 8th grade. So they come back from, you know, school because they joined the Gamers Guild. And they're like, hey, we learned about this new cool game. You want to play? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, it's got these big robots that shoot each other. I'm like, oh, I'm in. And so, yeah, I mean, because, I mean, also it was the era of Transformers. Like, you know, we had created, like, Transformer D&D characters and stuff like that using this old second edition rules. So jumping over to BattleTech was just really carrying straight on into the 80s era. So yeah, they brought it home and we started playing, and that was it. Just been playing and reading, and then I started writing in 05. My first couple stories were rejected, as every writer, their first stories are rejected. It is what it is. It hurts, but and then my first story was published in 08, except in 07, and it published in 08.
But you've had over a dozen, 17, I think.
About 17 stories, yeah.
That's awesome. And do you have a favorite affiliation? Draconis Combine or something?
I don't. I've been working hard to write heroes and villains in different... I'm like, there's a hero and villain every nation. Every nation does war crimes or has done war crimes at some point in their past. Every nation has had that moment of glory where they stood up, they did the right thing, they made the hard right moral choice. They're, you know, so because of my years in the Army and so much of the Federated Sons is kind of NATO-based... If I had to write a story today, like, you know, hey, I need a story by the end of the week, I would default to the Federated Sons, but it's because it's easier to write because they use NATO doctrine, they use NATO terminology. But if I'm just writing for myself, I try to find the right story. I don't really have, you know, a favorite child.
Fair enough. We appreciate your service, sir.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. I loved what I did. So, I mean, it's, you know, thank you for saying it, but you know, it was really my pleasure. There was some bad days, but there was a lot of good ones.
Well, Hansa, I don't know if you're going to be loved after Farther Country comes out. I'm not sure. You got me hooked. I'm all on board. This is going to be quite the...
I think we'll certainly get some closure to that open story. That'll be the best part.
Yeah.
Well, he's opening the door.
He's opening the door.
Closing one door, opening another, you know, and
that's right.
Honored and humbled, you know, you stand on the shoulders of giants. You stand on the shoulders of the writers that came before you. So.
Well, I wish you all the luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for this exclusive interview.
Groundbreaking interview.
Groundbreaking interview.
And I will appreciate for you. Thank you guys for having me. Thanks for letting me
talk. I know many of the other podcasts are going to die because they wish they would have gotten this one. So.
Jason, do you have any shout-outs?
Of course, I'm going to shout out my local stores. You know, they got the Battlegrounds down here in the North Richmond Southwest side and Waterloo up in Richmond's Northwest side, Northeast side. And then I guess I want to shout out my editing team. Phil and John, you know, please don't fire me for talking about this, you know, before the press release came out. And other than that, you know, I guess that's it.
Hey, Helfers, next time, you know, give us a heads up. You know,
I knew something was weird with him. He was a little too talkative this time.
He was.
No shit about that. He was sitting next to me that whole entire evening.
Yeah, no kidding.
And you didn't ask him any of these questions, Tommy?
There were some conversations.
You think I asked him about book questions? I probably didn't even know who he was.
He probably went, "Oh, that's the audiobook guy." I'm gonna avoid.
He probably was like, "Oh yeah, that's the audiobook guy. Fuck him."
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it was a great time with Jason. We would appreciate your time and what you're willing to divulge, and wish you a great time writing.
Thank you. I love it.
Looking forward to it.
Well, with that.
That's not the way the howl goes.
That's going to stay. That's got to stay.
Oh, he fell out of his chair.
Oh, shit. No.
Jason, are you okay?
No.
You didn't spill your beer, did you?
Dude, are you putting whiskey in your beer?
Oh, no. I just hit stop recording on Craig. God damn it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Dude, Hansa, I've never laughed that hard in a long time.
Oh, my God.
That was awesome. Oh. You didn't spill your beer, did you, Jason?
No, I was laughing so hard, you know, that I fell over.